Craig, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, Craig.
Hello, Craig.
We're here. It's TH Fantasy episode 71. I'm here with Ryan and Shane. How you guys doing? How about Ryan? You go first. How are you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing all right. I'm healing up okay, I guess.
Bionic man.
Yeah.
One of one, Ryan. Shane, how are you?
Doing well, man. Ready to go.
Excellent. Excellent.
How are you doing, Tony?
Hey, man. Living the dream, baby. Living in the ice storm dream.
Right. I'm going ice fishing tomorrow.
Yeah, Ryan's going off the grid once again.
It's 50 degrees here, so I know what suffering is like.
I'm pretty much just going to hang out. I can't fish too much, which sucks, but...
You could probably catch really small fish, right? Have someone reel it in for you.
Yeah, or I can just like move away from the hole and just drag the fish up, I guess.
This dude, like the cavemen used to do when they broke their arm.
Yeah. Run in the opposite direction.
Yeah. All right, so we got 71s. Let's talk 71s. We got a fun... This is going to be a pretty heavy Ryan episode. I'm calling it now.
I don't think so. I just had a couple honorable mentions that... They just had a couple things that, when I was doing the research, pointed out to me that was kind of interesting.
Cool. Well, let's start with our 71s. Yeah, tell me what you got.
Yeah, so let's talk about this first guy. He's our age, so he's a relatively recent player. Michael Roos. Played his entire career for the Tennessee Titans.
Is that R-O-O-S?
Yes.
Okay.
2005 NFL draft. Nothing too special about this guy, except for the fact that he's one of the only players I've seen so far to, after his professional career, to take up curling.
Fuck yeah.
Interesting fact, in 2018, Jared Allen formed a team of retired players and recruited Roos, also Mark Bulger and Keith Bullock, and they wanted to represent the United States in the 2022 Winter Olympic Games for curling.
I mean, I wanted that too, but...
They went to the 2019 USA Men's Challenge Round, which was the qualification for the event for the United States.
Sure.
And obviously lost, because I don't know, curling was kind of huge this last Olympics. I don't know, the U.S. had that really big beard guy. What was his name?
White people found a new hobby.
But that's who these guys lost to. It was a big like curling personality. I can't remember. That's who these guys lost to. So
if you're going to lose to the best, right?
Right. He's probably more known for his curling than it is his playing career, even though he played for a while because he was with the Titans.
Yeah. Who the fuck are the Titans?
Oh yeah. Honorable mention, Michael Roos.
It's a good one. Curling. How about it? So Shane, you went second last time. So I'll go second this time and then we'll circle back to Ryan.
I can also do my other one really quick.
Oh, yeah. Do your other honorable mention. Let's go.
Okay. Another one, Chicago boy. Okay. I just liked him because he was a Chicago boy. George Connor. Went to Holy Cross College, Notre Dame. Went to high school at De La Salle. Offensive tackle and linebacker. He was not expected to survive childhood because he was... a preemie, and he weighed like only 3 pounds.
Jesus.
And this was in 1925.
Hit the fucking weight room, bro.
Yeah, right? He served in the United States Navy during World War II, naturally, being born in 1925.
Right.
The year after, he's drafted by the New York Giants in 1946, but his father was ill at the time, so he elected to do another year at Notre Dame to stay close to the family, and actually won the national championships in 46 and 47.
There you go.
And then the Cleveland Browns picked him up in 1948.
Oh, so he's won some titles, huh?
And at the time, they offered him a contract of $13,000, which was like one of the highest paid, like... linebacker and lineman salaries at the time.
I think that's more than the curling team won in 2022.
Right.
Well, they won more than that in bar bets, but...
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought this guy was pretty cool because he's a local boy, Chicago boy. Notre Dame.
Yeah.
He died in Evanston. Lived his life. Lived his whole life in Chi-Town.
There you go.
There's something about deep dish keeps you there, man. Yeah, Weighs you down. You can't leave.
And if you're, bro, if you're in Evanston, the delis, like, why go to New York? Anything else on our honorable mentions?
No.
All right. I got a good one for you. All right. So I had a couple options this week, but I chose to pass on the Franco Harris Immaculate Reception shit for a couple reasons. One, because, like, man, Franco Harris, I know he just recently passed, but, like, that guy loved him some Joe Paterno. Joe Paterno was innocent if you're Franco Harris. So fuck that guy. And also, like, our podcast tends to be pretty oriented heavily towards the 70s Steelers. So I don't.
That's true.
Take a break.
They made their whole identity of that era, bro. They can have not 5 minutes.
Right. Yeah, we're fine. So instead, I decided I'm going to talk about a rule change in the NFL that started in the 1971 season. And because of this rule change, it has resulted in some of the coolest plays of all time. Now, prior to 1971, if a kicker missed a field goal short, it could be run back by the defensive team. However, if the kick crossed the goal line, it was an automatic touchback and could not be used. So, at this time, the league still had the goalposts like up front, close to the goal line. They wouldn't move those back until 1974. So, it's rare to see a team return a missed kick, right? Because if you're kicking from 60 yards, you get the ball if they miss it from where the ball is placed.
Right.
So it's, unless you're sure, like, all right, I'm going to return this for 50 yards. Like, there's no real incentive to do it. So now, and I don't know if you've noticed this, but some teams will, when they kick a really long field goal, they'll send their field goal blockers down there after the kick is off to go cover. Like, it's almost a kickoff. But anyways, when a play like this is a touchdown, it's technically called a kick six. Now, if you recall, a couple of years ago, there was a tie game between Cleveland and Baltimore on Monday Night Football, and Baltimore blocked the kick with like 2 seconds left, yeah, the go-ahead kick for Cleveland, and returned it, and they called it a kick six. But that's not a kick six. A kick six is when somebody misses or someone catches a short field goal and runs it back for a touchdown.
Yeah,
that makes more
sense. I love well-actualing another human being.
Yes.
So thank you for the knowledge.
Fuck you, Baltimore. All right. So there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We have 6 kick sixes in NFL history.
That's it?
Yep. 1998, really? Aaron Glenn of the Jets took a missed Mike Vanderjet kick 104 yards for a touchdown. 2002, Chris McAllister from Baltimore took a missed Jason Elam field goal 107 yards with, y'all, without a doubt, the dirtiest block in Ray Lewis's career. Like, unbelievable. And it's right in front of everybody, and no one calls it. It's nuts.
Was this pre- or post-murder?
This is post-murder.
Okay, that'd be why.
Yes. Yeah, I know, right? In 2005 and 2006, the Chicago Bears returned 2 missed kicks for touchdowns of over 100 yards, both setting the record for the longest play in NFL history at the time. Nathan Vasher, 108 versus San Francisco. And then the next year, Devin Hester went 109 against the New York Giants. In 2007, Antonio Cromartie of the Chargers took a missed Minnesota kick 109 yards for a touchdown and probably inseminated multiple people along the way. My God, that guy's got fucking loins.
Dude, him and Rivers, they got 2 teams, 2 squads.
Insane. They could go head to head. And then let us not forget Jamal fucking Agnew's 109-yard kick six against Arizona 2 years ago.
Oh, that's right.
Exactly.
Shout out to Spark.
So a couple more. Chicago Bears scrub Deontay Johnson and future actual NFL player Adam Humphries have taken kick sixes to the house in preseason games. And it's happened 8 times in college ball. I got some fun ones for you here.
Okay.
That's
kind of surprising, though, too, with all the teams they have in college. You would think it happened more than 8 times, but
right?
I guess, you know, they're not really trying. I don't think I've seen a game where a college team attempts longer than, like, what, a 45, maybe 48-yard field goal?
I'm going to remind you of something in a moment, and you're going to be like, that's right. Oh, that's right. All right, here we go. First one, James Elmore, 95 yards versus Carson Newman College in 1926.
1926.
George Wooten went 108 yards for, I kid you not, a college called the Elon Fightin' Christians.
Really?
Against the Catawba Indians in 1960. I bet you their logo was not racist at all.
Different era.
Well, that was like Division Ocho.
whatever the racist division is. Don Guest, 108 for Cal in 1966. Richie Luzzi, 108 for Clemson in 1968. Odell Beckham went 109 for LSU in 2013.
Damn, Beckham got one?
Beckham got one. Brandon McDowell in 2015, 105. 2016, Brandon Wilson went 109 for Houston. But the most famous one is 2013, Chris Davis for Auburn going 109 yards against Alabama.
They rushed the field, right?
Yep. Auburn was ranked fourth in the country. Alabama was undefeated. And Auburn tied the game up with 32 seconds left. Bama moved the ball to the 38 to kick the game-winning field goal. Missed it short. And Davis ran it back for a touchdown. It's like considered, it was like the ESPN's play of the year that year or whatever.
Sure.
So I have to end on a high note. So I wanted to mention also, in the summer of 2016, Brandon Banks for the Hamilton Tiger Cats had a 120 yard kick six in Canada.
How was 120 yards even possible?
Cause their end zones are like stupid long.
That's right, but I didn't think they were like that much longer.
Okay, so that was after they shortened the end zones, and I'm going to end with this. I don't know the guy's name, but in 1958, there was a Canadian football kick six of 131 yards.
Jesus.
They're just playing in a field, bro. This is someone's farmland.
Are there end zones like 25 yards deep?
He was weaving in and out of corn stalks and defenders and... the wheat fields,
the threshers,
yeah, right.
The maple trees.
So that's my 71 is the 1971 rule change that allowed for kick sixes to happen.
Hell yeah.
That's a cool one. I like that.
Right.
I'm always amazed when you come up with this stuff. I would have never thought to look up something like that.
I smoke a lot of weed. Also, speaking of, before you do your Shane, I wanted to say, I was looking back at the chat. I want to say hi to all the moms. I want to say hi to Shane's mom. I want to say hi to Ryan's mom. I want to say hi to my mom. Pretty sure our moms listen to this. So now that I've mentioned that I smoke weed, hi to the moms.
I had to explain what TH Fantasy was to my mom. She's like, does it mean what it think it means? I was like, yeah.
I think they figured that out about 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. Dryer sheets can only do so much. All right, Shane, what do you got?
Speaking of women, I have a woman 71.
Let's go.
What? For real?
It's not football. I went to the trench. I went to the trench again. I thought
this
weird.
Was like a flag football league somewhere.
Oh, no. I was doing my research for 70, and I was trying to find unique last names, and I stumbled upon Yvonne Goolagong Colley.
Okay.
All right.
But she didn't fit 1970, but she fits 1971 because she was the number one ranked women's tennis player in 1971 because she won the French Open, the Wimbledon, and the Australian double champion with Margaret Court.
Damn.
The triple slam? Holy crap.
Yeah, she's – it gets a little rough in here, so I apologize, but her story is like it will make you want to run through a wall.
Let's go.
She was one of eight children, and even though she was in a disadvantaged position in life because she was born Aboriginal in Australia, she was allowed to play at a local court because the club owner, Bill Kurtzman, saw her kind of just like watching through the fence. This is like a Hollywood story, dude, like straight up.
Yeah.
Like he just sees this little girl like playing. He's like, come on, come and play. So she's actually Wiradjuri, which is one of the Aboriginal groups. I don't know the proper term for the ending, which is between Brisbane in Queensland, which is up north on the east coast, and Victoria, Melbourne, which is on the bottom. So it's kind of like the middle ground of between New York and Florida from them.
Sure, where the spiders are super friendly and not the size of automobiles.
Yeah, it's not where Mad Max takes place.
Sure.
So she read in a magazine while she was like just putzing around doing tennis. in this magazine called Princess that someone was trained at a place called Wimbledon and won the event, but she thought it was basically like a fairy tale, right? She didn't think it was real. And then someone explained to her, like, yeah, this is real. Like, this is an actual person. Like, here's a picture of them. Like, they actually won the thing. So it kind of lit a fire under her at that age to pursue tennis more seriously and actually do what she wanted to do. And she came from a pretty, like, not great upbringing, but her being one of eight children. So her first tennis outfit was actually made from bed sheets, and her first racket was made from a fruit box. So I was watching a video, and basically it's just a big, like, paddle. And she's like, I used to play tennis with this, and everybody asked me stupid questions. I hit them with it to this day.
Awesome.
She was really charming. I liked her a lot. So in 1965, she was scouted by a guy named Vic Edwards at the same place because there was a lot of rumblings going on in the tennis community. Like, hey, this girl's like legit. Like, she could be the one. So she moved away to Sydney from her family to pursue tennis full time. This is like in her late teens. Edwards would become her full legal guardian and coach. Unfortunately, like most men in power, he controlled her career and finances. And she later admitted that he did make advances towards her. At that time frame, yeah, that's as bad as it gets. So
okay,
why
can't just be fucking cool? Why?
I know, like, I know. It's cool. I was crying in the club reading this on Wikipedia yesterday. Straight up,
just be fucking cool.
So when she's, I think she's at Wimbledon when she meets her future husband, Roger Cawley, at one of the tournaments, and then they end up just kind of kicking it off, and then causes tension within her and Edwards. And she eventually separates from Edwards in 1975 legally because she marries Cawley. And in the 1975 Wimbledon event, Edwards was officially her coach, but they sat on opposite sides and she sat with Cawley at the Wimbledon event.
So he was also a tennis pro?
Correct, yeah. So okay. He was an American. They resided in Florida after a certain time before they moved back to Australia.
Australia to Florida is such a natural combination.
Yeah. Both sick cunts in different ways. So I'm going to rattle off a bunch of her achievements because she's basically seen as one of the goats of women's tennis, which I had no clue about. Cause like, I don't know, we don't get a lot of tennis exposure in America. We know like Venus, Serena, and like Billie Jean King. That's about it.
Yeah. Like Martina Navratilova. Like that's,
yeah,
like,
that was,
unfortunately we're just told like, this is a hot tennis lady.
Yep. 100%.
Come on, dude. It's sports.
Yeah, so she won a total of 14 Grand Slam tournament titles across her career. So she won 7 in singles, 4 at the Australian Open, 2 at Wimbledon, 1 at the French Open, 6 in women's doubles, 1 in mixed doubles. She represented Australia in the 3 Fed Cup competition, winning the title in 71, 73, 74. And she was the captain for 3 consecutive years as well. She was named Australian of the Year in 1971. She was appointed to the Member of the Order of the British Empire in 1972 and an Officer of the Order of Australia in 1982. She was inducted into the Australian Sports Hall of Fame in 1985, the International Tennis Hall of Fame in 1989, the Aboriginal Sporting Hall of Fame in 89, and then she retired in 89. And then she coached for like the rest of the time.
Jesus, I need a smoke after that.
Holy fuck.
And that's like, that's not even like all the museums and like memorabilia shit that she has like in a different section of Wikipedia. I was like, I can't monopolize the whole, I can do a whole podcast on this. But so she currently runs the Goolagong National Development Camp for Indigenous boys and girls, where she basically encourages Indigenous kids to stay in school and just kind of better themselves and kind of make up for the fucked up things that Australia did. Cause she was actually almost a victim of the Stolen Generation, which Canada had, you know, I mean, where they take them, put them into specialty schools and basically rip them away from their family. But she got really lucky with that. And then I'll end on this quote from her. So I think that's why losing a match never really bothered me. I just felt that I was lucky to be there in the first place to enjoy this wonderful game. And it's my own little world. I felt this was my world and no one could touch me here.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, dude, she was badass.
I want
to. She is badass. She's still alive, so.
That is a 71. That
damn.
She got that dog.
She does.
Can I get that name one more time?
Yvonne Goolagong Cawley.
Yvonne Goolagong Cawley. Fuck yeah, that's a good one. We got top to bottom hits today on 71, Ryan. So you got a tall order ahead of you, and I'm prepared. I'm excited to see you do it. Take it away.
Okay. So let's talk about someone that was a part of one of my favorite teams from this year. They had a great season. They made the playoffs. Let's talk about someone that is in the NFL Hall of Fame.
Okay.
The Jaguars Hall of Fame. And the college. And the College Hall of Fame.
Oh yeah.
Let's talk about Tony Boselli.
Tony Boselli.
Hell yeah. He's actually the first ever player to be picked by the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, number one overall, right?
No, I don't think it was one overall, but he went in the first round, but I think Jacksonville had like, I don't know.
Let's top pick 50, two.
One of the
pick two.
Pick two, yeah. They had one of the top picks. So one of the first players, or the first player to ever be drafted by the Jacksonville Jaguars. He was one of the franchise's most productive and popular players. 5 Pro Bowls, 3 All-Pros, 2 AFC Championships games. So it's kind of tough to remember the Jaguars being good, but they've had their years.
Dude, the first, remember it was like the Jaguars and the Panthers came in like 95, and then like 2 years later they were both in like their respective title games.
Yeah, yeah.
Fred Taylor, Mark Brunell.
He played like 1 year with Houston, but got real injured and just threw that season up as a wash. And then I'm pretty sure Jacksonville signed him to a 1 day contract so he could retire a Jag. But in true Jacksonville, Florida form, he participated in numerous business ventures.
All right, here we go.
Along with his former teammates Mark Brunell and Brian Schwartz, get this, they invested in 7 Mattress Firm betting stores in the Jacksonville metro area.
Fuck yeah.
That's just money laundering.
That is absolutely money laundering.
But it says that by the time in 2002 he got traded to the Texans, he had already sold his business ventures in that. But then him and Brunell also own all Whataburg franchise locations in the Jacksonville area. I've never been to a Whataburger because it's not up here. Do they have that out in California, Shane?
They're very spread out. I think they're Midwest, so, like a southern thing.
Have you been to one? What is it? Is it just another burger place?
Yeah, I'd have to get you a confirmation. I haven't had in like 15 years.
Dude, I've had Whataburger.
Where?
I was on tour. We ate Whataburger in Tulsa.
Yeah, it's a Texas thing, right?
Is it a South thing?
It was in Oklahoma too. So
that's connected.
You know, when you're on tour and when you're on tour and you play shows, you're like, you have your 2 beers that you get from the bar and you're like, fuck, I haven't eaten all day. I'm fucking ooh. And on the way home, we were driving and we stayed at like the crustiest of the crust punk houses, the grossest house I've ever stayed in. Love you, Todd. And like we stopped at Whataburger and it was because I was hammered, but it was greasy and it was fucking awesome. It's a burger joint. Like you could trade it for a Culver's to be named later.
Sure. He also has a like a sports casting kind of career too.
Yeah, he sucked. Remember, he's fucking terrible.
Yeah, I honestly don't remember. I remember him in the booth at all. He did Jaguars radio play-by-play at one point. I don't think he still does that now. It says he did. Boselli drew praise as one of the best in the business. And Tony's like, this guy sucked.
Oh, hey, that's.
It was. I guess it was for NFL. It was for Fox that he. Right. I guess he had a contract with. Yeah, they have the Boselli Foundation with his wife. They work with at-risk youth. Let's see, to help them cultivate high esteem and succeed at home, school, and play. Oh wow, he overcame opposition from local politicians when the Boselli Foundation proposed renovating and reopening a closed community center. Huh?
They had to fight to save the rec center.
I guess,
dude. Oh, that's the plot to Electric Boogaloo 2.
That's the plot to that ski movie too.
Ski School that I watched yesterday.
is that in that one? Because it's in at least one of those 80s ski movies.
Kinda, yeah.
we got to have a race to see. And if you win the race, you get to save the rec center.
Right.
Or whatever.
But yeah, one of the Jaguars' all-time greats.
Tony Boselli is the only Jacksonville Jaguar in the Hall of Fame.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Also, can I just say, you didn't mention his full name. His full name is Don Bosco Anthony Boselli Jr.
What?
That's a Sopranos character.
I missed that one.
Hey, it's Don Bosco.
Hey, I'd like to order the Gabagool.
You're telling me, because Mattress Firm is a money laundering scheme, a guy named Don Bosco Boselli isn't doing organized crime through a mattress firm? Are you fucking kidding me?
Careful, guys. I just got investigated by the FBI to get on the TSA pre-flight list, so I think we're being tapped.
Dude, they're listening. That's why we're so high in Australia. They're listening. Yeah. All right, so let's take a break from our 71s, and we're going to talk tight ends. we got some fun stuff ahead, so stick around. All right, bring us back, baby.
Hold on, I gotta take a gummy.
I'm keeping that in.
And we're back.
We're back, and we're back to talk tight ends. Like I said, Ryan, you said you were against this earlier, but this is a Ryan-heavy episode. I need to know.
Yeah, that's true.
Now that we've dipped in, Shane, you said you watched like 9 of these guys?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I was in the forest too long, and I just stopped looking at the trees. They hit a point with a lot of them where they all just blended together. 6'5" white guy, 250. They all look the same in line. Sorry.
Yeah. Did you go hunting? Like I haven't gone hunting yet. Where I look off, where I look at guys that are like off of Tony's list.
No, I'm not that degenerate yet.
Okay.
I tried to find crap, and of course, there's a guy that is not on here that's going to end up in like the third round, and we're going to have to
you put 19 people on this list. PFF only has 5 graded.
I know. So Ryan,
Tony put together a good list. So yeah.
Well, you're in the weeds. So tell us what you see. Tell me, Ryan, let's not even fuck around. We'll save the ones that people care about for fantasy for the end. Tell me about the guy that I know nothing about.
All right, so let's look at North Dakota State.
Noah Gindorf.
All right. I'm actually comparing this guy to Gronk. If you watch some of his highlight reels.
Jesus Christ, Ryan.
I'm serious.
Wait till you see the upper echelon.
He's got that Gronk body. He does... he's got great hands on these deep routes. He had a lot of deep routes.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
So he's a field stretcher.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. A lot of his highlights. I'm sure there's a whole bunch of blocking because it is San Diego's or North Dakota State. So I don't know if you guys looked at him at all.
I am not that deep.
Okay. Yeah, I started on the back page and made. That's what I'm doing. So,
but I'll tell you what,
I like to see some of these gems because we all know that, you know, Mayer's going to be good and there's thousands of minutes of tapes on that shit. But
if he's, listen, I'm looking at like, my God, he's like not getting a ton of targets, but he's also on North Dakota State. And if he is, I mean, he's 6'6 and 268. If he runs a 4.7 like he's supposed to, that's
pretty nice. He could translate well to the NFL, I think, if he gets on the right team that utilizes tight ends a lot.
I can't wait to talk you out of starting him next year in DFS.
Oh, it's going to be great. I might draft this guy, honestly. In Dynasty.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so who else you got?
Let's see. Who else did I look at? Austin Stogner, South Carolina, and Oklahoma too. You had him listed as South Carolina, but a lot of the tape I was watching was when he was in Oklahoma catching passes from, was it Rattler?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had a good chemistry with Rattler. A lot of the stuff that I was seeing, he was covered tight, like double teamed, like, cause he was probably one of the really good targets that Rattler had to throw to. And he's making great catches, like double covered and like all these great fades in the end zone. You see a lot of fades. I'm comparing him to Freiermuth, actually.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So he's a transfer. Okay.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't see a lot from when he was on South Carolina. It was all with Oklahoma.
What I noticed, too, in tight ends, there's a lot more dog per capita.
Yes.
For the people that are scouting, that I'm scouting compared to the other positions, where like there's some people where I'm like, okay, that dude's an animal. Or these, like, all these dudes in this tight end, people are trying to get it every play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you guys, looked at him at all.
Not yet. So if you had to pick between the two of the guys you just mentioned, if we're talking Stogner or Gindorf, which would be such a great Broadway pairing. Stogner and Gindorf. Who are you taking?
I'm probably going Gindorf.
Okay.
I liked his tape, and granted, you know, it's not Division I football, but he could translate well. I hope to God he's not like, God, who was the guy that we drafted from like North Carolina State or the Bears drafted like 3 years ago?
You might be thinking of Adam Shaheen.
Shaheen, yeah.
He was noted anti-vaxxer.
His tape was really freaking good, but first of all, he was drafted by the Bears, so
that's gonna
didn't get a great opportunity there.
That's gonna hamper you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he didn't do too much in Miami either.
Right. So
I can go one more guy right now and then you guys can start. But you guys probably looked at this guy.
Is he the other 6'7" guy?
Wasn't it Theo Johnson?
Where is he? Penn State or Brevin Spanford from Minnesota?
No, it was Theo Johnson. There's actually a lot about Theo Johnson. Where the hell is he on here?
Number 12.
Number 12, my friend.
Oh, yeah, there he is. So I think he's got a good comparison to Pitts.
Whoa.
That's okay. Fantasy sphere creaming right now.
So you're talking, when you're comparing players, you're essentially saying like, you're not saying he's as good as, you're saying he plays like this player.
Yeah. A lot of the tape I saw, it kind of emulates the way those guys look.
Sure.
There's actually a lot of stuff about him and his story from high school and stuff. He's got a pretty interesting story. Seems like he's always been the biggest athlete or the best athlete on whatever team he's been on.
He is 6'6", 260.
Yeah, his tape, like some of his high school like footage was just ridiculous. Like nobody could tackle him.
Can I just point out that my man Ryan is watching high school tape of the 12th ranked tight end prospect for 2023?
This is why we did tight ends first, because this is Ryan's bread and butter to get him into film. I'm like, all right, now you can watch quarterbacks. I don't give a shit about running back. Right. Whatever,
I'm not the greatest at analysis and putting my thoughts together, but when I watched a lot of the tape of this guy, there's like a glimmer of hope with this guy.
All I need. And that's all I need from a tight end whisperer. He
can translate well, I think.
Where does Theo Johnson fall on the Stogner-Gindorf line?
I'd like Theo above those three.
Really? Okay. Theo Johnson.
Yeah.
He did say he was Kyle Pitts.
Literally, Ryan was like, this is Kyle Pitts. This man is Kyle Pitts, the human being.
He plays for a better team. I mean, Penn State, I mean, they do a lot of running, but that also leaves a lot of opportunities for short tight end routes, and he's made a lot of those plays and turned them into long yardage plays.
Okay. So Ryan has taken us through a free jazz odyssey of some of our deeper tight ends. I think I'm going to bump some of these guys up my rankings real quick. in terms of like not like points, but like when I'm going to watch them, because I want this one fresh in my head here.
Yeah.
So I can argue with you. So Ryan had said that he hasn't really looked at the top guys, and it's too bad because, oh my God, these top guys. This is a
certified hood classic. I like the duality between Michael Mayer and Luke Musgrave. They are two polar opposite styles of player in the position. And I think watching them back to back really made me appreciate the position a lot more. Someone who was, I don't want to say tight ends daunting to me, because like scouting running back, scouting wide receiver, you can kind of figure it out, right? But there's so many nuances to a tight end where like I appreciate Ryan's analysis of they're good. Like that's all I need from Ryan, right? Where like my analytical brain's like, okay, what's the block? Right. You know what I mean? Where Mayer and Musgrave were very polar opposite players, but I think they have similar ceilings but in different ways.
I agree. I think you're nailing it, because I feel like Mayer is the guy that's going to get you 6 for 50, and Musgrave could get you 3 for 98 and a touchdown.
Yeah.
And
I definitely clicked in my brain of why, because like, again, most people know this. I've only been watching football for like 3 years seriously, but I know like players. I know Gronk, right? And I know like the Belichick system of two tight end sets, where like I was watching Michael Mayer and I was like, I get why Bill Belichick has the biggest boner for two tight end sets, because if you have two players like this, you can't lose.
Right. They do too many different things. And like the thing I liked, the thing that gives Mayer the edge to me is that he does block a lot better than Musgrave.
Oh yeah. Musgrave is not a blocker. He is a receiving. He's a big wide receiver. That's what he is.
Him in like Detroit, you know, like replace Hawkinson.
Oh dude, Detroit's going to get one of these top four guys. Absolutely.
I really 100%. Like Detroit for these top tight ends. Yeah.
Fantasy has manifested Michael Mayer to the Green Bay Packers at 15. Ooh. Across every single mock I've seen the last fucking 6 weeks.
I think there's a chance Meyer goes to Green Bay. I think you could see Musgrave or Kincaid to Detroit maybe, but I also think that Cincinnati's an interesting spot for a tight end.
Yeah, you're right. They need someone.
And so I think it depends on like what you're looking for here, because I think Meyer is like, you can throw deep to Michael Mayer, but he's a possession tight end.
I saw this phrase of him, because I was really watching him and trying to figure out like how to describe him, and they said, I can't remember the source, but someone said there is no wasted movement in Michael Mayer's game. You watch everything that he does, everything is intentional, everything is continuously, it's all one complete package.
Sure. He lines up everywhere. He's a good run blocker. I watched him beat linebackers. I watched him beat cornerbacks. I watched him beat safeties. I think he should be the number one tight end in this class. He should be. But
yeah, just based on complete, like rounded ability, because he's built like a fridge. Right.
But when Musgrave goes to the combine and just rips shit up, that's going to be nuts.
If he has a Jelani Woods-esque RAS score where he's like 9.8, like he's going to fly up draft boards. Like I wrote in my write-up that as of February, I would rather have Musgrave in the third than Mayer, like 109, right? But he kills that combine, dude. He's already going to be a mid-second rounder.
Yeah, Ryan, like Musgrave, I described him as a box with a question mark painted on the side of it.
Sure.
There's only like three tapes of him online.
Well, it's because he sat out for COVID. He sat out the COVID year. He had 22 catches as a junior and then got hurt after two games in his last season.
Oh, no.
But like, he's big, he's fast, and he looks real fast. I comped him as if George Kittle never got into pro wrestling. Because like, he's fast and he's big and he can catch. But he's not going to like dog you for like 8 yards after the catch and then like drop the ball in front of your face and be like, fuck you. but like, I'm excited to see. I want to know, Ryan, who you like more, Mayer or Musgrave, when you get a chance.
Sure. Yeah, I'll take a look this week.
Shane, what do you think about Dalton Kincaid, who also is another one of the tight ends who really is just a slot receiver?
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say this is the year of the rabbit, but the 23 draft class is the year of the running back depth and the year of the slot receiver, because that's all he does is he just lines up in the slot, which, like, honestly, I love. I know we talk about, like, getting snap share, right? If you want the tight end to be on the field the longest, to have the most ability to have opportunity, right? But if you're just lining him up as another wide receiver, as a big boy, I don't see the problem, right? Like I was talking about earlier with the two tight end sets with Bill Belichick, if you can have someone to do that with, you can fake the block, right?
It
doesn't matter, because he's just going to catch the ball and he's just going to make you look stupid.
Yeah. He's got really good, and, like, man, I fucking hate when we talk about, did this tight end play basketball? I hate that shit. But, like, he plays like he played basketball. Like, he'll high point the ball and be turning and making the catch, like, over his head. He's one of those dudes that a quarterback's going to be like, if I put it around him, he's going to catch it.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
And that was a lot of the things I've been realizing, too, the tight end slot. A lot of these guys have a very good understanding of how to extend their body frame outside of the catch radius, which is nice to see, and a lot of really solid hands within this upper echelon of people.
I ended up comping Dalton Kincaid to David Njoku. Okay. Not a guy that I think is, I don't think he's going to push for the top two tight end spots, because, man, there's so much tape of him getting blown the fuck up trying to block.
He tries, but it's just not his forte.
So I there's no way that he goes before the big two, but there's a good chance that he could be the third tight end off the board.
He's the smallest of the tight ends this year, right? I think that was, like, the big knock. He's 6'4", 240, which still
is tiny.
Yeah.
But let's switch to a big boy, Darnell Washington, 6'7", 270. That is the Brock Lesnar gif of him going, big boy.
And honestly, that's all I saw. I saw a blocker and a big guy. He's just a positional advantage, because you can put the ball 10 feet in the air, and the only person who's going to catch that ball over him is DK Metcalf.
Right? Like, I look at Darnell Washington, and he looked like a guy you'd create in Madden.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah, right?
All right, I'm going to make a guy that's 6'7", 270, and he's a tight end.
He just sticks his hand up. Doesn't have to leave the fucking ground. Touchdown.
It's funny, though, because, like, for a dude that big, he's got speed.
He's definitely mobile.
One of my favorite things that I saw them do when he, you know, for Georgia's offense, is they'd run, like, sweeps, and they'd have him out as a lead blocker.
Oh, dude, he was steamrolling people all day long.
Who the fuck is going to get in front of that guy?
And I feel like, as much of, like, I don't want to say I'm down on him, but I don't, like, see a really high ceiling for him. I think he's a victim of circumstance, because he's on the same team as Brock Bowers, and Brock Bowers is, like, supposedly Kyle Pitts tier, or one tier above Kyle Pitts. So, like, he didn't have the opportunity to show what he could do outside of, like, end zone threat, or, like, the dude who's just going to run block for 90% of the game.
Right. I think, though, that, like, from what I saw, I don't think he's got much of a fantasy relevance, but I think that he's a good football player, and I think he's a good tight end. You're just, like, I want him out there with other big, meaty men slapping meat. Yeah, just meat slapping.
That's why I comped him to Darnold Parham, because, like, as much as I love that big man, like, he's not doing anything for your fantasy roster, right? He's just a situational guy where he's good in one position, and if you're playing DFS and you got, like, the $100 or $1,000, whatever your budget is, and you're like, that's all I can do, sorry.
I did like, my favorite thing, though, about Darnell Washington was he's probably the best tight end in this class off the play action.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, dude. He's so big and he's so quick, right? Like, I don't know if he ever gets 40 targets in a season, but, like, he might still score 5 touchdowns.
True.
Because he's big enough that when he pushes you, you're not like, oh, this is the fake push before he runs to the end zone. It's like, I need to get out of this man's way or I'm going to die.
I'm making a professional choice.
Right. Yeah, business decision. He was fun.
I know you guys are in two tight end or tight end premium leagues, and I think a lot of these depth guys are going to be really important for that style of league where it's like, even though this guy is, we're not excited for fantasy, but it's like, if you need a spot start and someone who's 6'7", like every week he gives you opportunity to give you a touchdown. So it's like, why not? Right. And take him in the fourth or.
What's that league that we're in, Tony, that we have to start two tight ends? I've got like so much stuff that tight end in that league.
Yeah. That's the toucan league. That's the one we were rebuilding last week.
That's where you were
like, I'll just take Jelani Woods. I'll just take Peyton Hendershot. I'll just take every rookie I can. And now this year you get to cut a bunch of the shitty ones. And
well, we'll see. I think I'm going to hold on to Ruckert because he's an Ohio State product.
You're crazy.
We'll see. We'll see.
Let's talk. Shane, did you watch Sam Laporta?
I did. That man is covered in grease. You will not catch him.
Oh, well, he's plays for the Big Ten. And that's one of the guys I actually know about because I watch a lot of Iowa football,
right. Which is unfortunate.
He was like their number one receiving threat, right?
2 years in a row.
Yeah. But what was the game, Tony, we watched? Or we were just like texting back and forth because it was like, what was the game ended? What was it, like 5-3?
Yeah, it was so bad. You know, it was like 8-3.
Because there was a safety.
There was a safety and two field goals.
Yeah. Like,
that's how football should be. No, I don't want sixty points.
That's Big Ten football.
Fantasy punting.
I want 3 hours of misery.
Right?
Like so, watching Minnesota or U of I.
So I liked Sam Laporta. I don't know if he does anything in the pros. Look, if I'm at the end of the fourth or the mid fourth, sure. Like sit on my fantasy squad for a year.
Someone will give him a chance, I think, but I think you're right. He's not going to translate well.
There was no clutch factor. That's what I saw where I was like, you're dependable, but I don't see it. There's not an it factor here.
Okay. The only thing that I want to say that speaks to his potential is how fucking putrid Iowa's offense is. Right.
Yeah.
And what I noticed was, defenses were like, all right, the tight end's the only dude they're throwing to.
Yeah.
And so I saw him get a lot of either double coverage or safety help over the top. And then I saw a lot of times where he was the right read on the call and ball didn't make it to him either because it was overthrown, quarterback was sacked, quarterback didn't see him. Like, he was open a lot more than his numbers.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
But also at the same time, like, I wonder how well his yards after catch ability goes at the next level. Because he's got that dog. He does have that dog. He wants to block. He wants to mix it up. He's not the best blocker, but he's willing to.
He's got to learn to block because, you know, 75% of the Iowa's offense is the run. You have to be proficient at blocking and being more than halfway decent to play in the Big Ten, I think.
Right. I think there's a world where Sam Laporta is a relevant tight end in fantasy. I actually think Sam Laporta's got a better chance to be fantasy relevant than Darnell Washington.
100%.
Really? Yeah. Darnell Washington's a better football player than Sam Laporta, but Sam Laporta is going to be a better fantasy asset.
Okay.
Also, Sam Laporta is from Illinois.
That's right.
Like deep, deep south, like St. Louis, Illinois.
Oh, like East St. Louis?
But like, no, he's in the St. Louis metro area.
Okay.
So Shane, who else have you looked at? Have you done Tucker Kraft?
I did watch Tucker Kraft. And I want to say a motherfucking jet sweep with a tight end and he played Wildcat. I'm in, dude.
Fuck yeah.
Take him in the third. I watched those plays. I had to stand up whatever I was doing. And I was like, holy shit, they just ran a jet sweep with Tucker Kraft.
I don't know if I've ever seen a jet sweep with a tight end.
Actually, we do have a tight end that was drafted last year that was used a lot in the jet sweep game in college. And his name is Isaiah Likely.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, but they didn't do that in the NFL.
Should have.
When I watched him, though, he played similar to Laporta, a little bit differently. He just played bigger, right? You see some players, and just like, even though you're the same frame, like Tucker Kraft seemed like he was more of a freight train than Laporta, even though they're basically 6'5", 6'4", 250, 255.
Right.
The only knock I had on him was he played at a smaller school, so competition's lower, right? I mean, that's right. Just, it comes with the territory, but sometimes these dudes do come out and they make it. Like, fortunately, even though he played in a smaller school, he was just like treating kids like they were children, right? where it was affirming to be like, okay, your talent level is above where you're playing.
Sure. Sure.
So, and I liked him a lot.
Those are those guys that, like, you sit him in your taxi squad for a year if you can. And if he gets decent draft cap.
Yeah, that's where him, Laporta, Kincaid are all guys I need to see where their draft capital goes, right? Where I'm assuming for you guys last year when Bellinger, because Bellinger were in the second or third?
Third, yeah.
Yeah, which is pretty high for a tight end, right? I mean, compared to like the class. I mean, it kind of dictates of, that's kind of what I'm leaning on this year is, the tiers are so wide for me on so many players where draft capital is really going to be the distinguishing factor,
right?
On top of situation, right? Of like, I don't want this guy to be drafted to be tight end number two on the Falcons, right? It's like, I don't want that. Right. I'm not touching that scheme or that situation. But
Darnell Washington would be sick in the red zone for Atlanta, though.
Yeah, they don't need anybody to throw.
Yeah, fuck it. Put him back there. Let him throw touchdowns.
Well, we have the combine next week, so we're going to see all these.
Yeah, I was gonna say let him take all of Pitt's touchdowns.
He's got a torn MCL, right? He's coming back. He needs some time.
It's true. So Tucker Kraft, that's an interesting one. So is it Josh Weil?
From Cincinnati.
Yeah, Weil.
Yeah, we'll call him Weil.
Weil. I just remember him from the Ritter tape.
He's a lot better in 21.
Yeah,
I'm not a Ritter truther, but the disparity between Ritter and whatever quarterback they had there was abysmal. It was very tough to watch because their quarterback was very much a one read. I'm looking only at half the field. So if Weil was not on that side, he was not even being looked at, where his target share, like, I think his target share went down a little bit, but his yak went up. So it kind of evened out within the same, but it wasn't really. The 22 production didn't reflect what I saw on tape, which is why we don't just stat look, right?
Right.
He was a great route runner, though. I watched a little bit of Josh Weil.
Yeah.
He doesn't, like, when I watched him from the Ritter tape, I was like, man, this guy's getting a ton of production on one route. He's got the fake RPO that he cuts across, and instead of blocking the edge defender, he just sneaks out. And that was like 90% of his production.
Well, that was their offense, right?
Right.
It was like, okay, Alec Pierce runs two routes.
Just go for Ritter.
Yeah, Ritter's basically Mariota 2.0 of we're going to do RPO. And then, okay, we need the release valve of Weil.
Don't forget like Jerome Ford.
Is he in the NFL or is he being drafted this year?
No, he was, I think he's on Cleveland's practice squad, or he was something like that. I don't know. He was one of those like running backs that you're going to completely forget about. Like, you know, Abram Smith, who made his XFL debut last weekend.
Did anybody watch the XFL?
Yeah. Hell yeah. Ryan and I did.
We did. Yeah.
Yeah. It was Ryan's birthday. So I went out there and we ordered a pizza and we watched a
game that was going so bad. It was like 7-3 at halftime, and then me and Tony are like, well, let's bet the under, because and then of course they all beat the under and scored like three touchdowns in the fourth quarter.
Dude, the under the point total at halftime was 18.5.
Yeah, it was ridiculous
combined because it was 3-3.
It started at 37.5, and at halftime it was like under 20.
18. And well, it honestly, man, like some of the rule stuff super fun. Like the kickoff alignment stuff is really cool.
Yeah, Shane, you got to see how they do their kickoffs. It's pretty cool.
I'll check it out. They do. They don't have an onside kick, right? They have like a fourth and 15.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll check it out for sure.
Which fucking rule.
You can go and you can go for 1, 2, or 3 points on the extra point attempt.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, dude. From the two for 1 point, the 5 for 2 points, and the 10 for 3 points.
I thought it was like the 15.
No,
this is the 10.
Yeah.
But hey, dude, this is where Darnell Washington will thrive in the XFL. Get him on that 15. Just put him in the end zone. Put him on a fade. 3 points.
Dude, that's the thing about scouting all these dudes is that the ones that don't make it to the league, like USFL, baby. Like,
true.
I'm in. All right, so we've done our talks. We've done our tight ends. Like I said, heavy Ryan episode because tight end moment. This is I'm excited. I'm gonna dig into some of these.
Yeah,
some of these older guys.
And we'll talk more tight ends. We have so much off season to go through, so we're gonna touch on at least 10 more guys. So
fuck yeah.
Oh yeah. And well, combine's happening next week, so we're gonna see everybody who's rising.
Yeah. And then I'll randomly chime in every once in a while when I find a gem that nobody's talking about.
Those are the most important ones. So we will be, since the combine starts on the 28th. Yeah, Ryan, by our next episode, Shane, we should have a little bit of combine data sneaking in.
No, nice. It's the 28th. Oh, the 28th is what, Tuesday?
Tuesday.
Yeah, sure is.
Okay.
So we'll have some early combine data, which is really cool. And hopefully it'll impact all our rankings and we'll have completely disavowed everything that we said today.
Jalen Hyatt, 4.25.
Oh God, that's going to be so sick. Tyreek Hill.
Has he ran that before?
I think he clocked like 4.28 is what his, like, someone told him to run and he ran it by himself and then like they verified it with somebody else.
Huh.
I'll have to look it up. He's a burner.
That's what I want to fuck.
Is he small?
Everyone's small.
Yeah. Everybody's a quote unquote slot player this year. So
really
People are mad that no one is AJ Brown and DK Metcalf.
We're going to find the next Julian Edelman this year.
Oh dude. How many sneaky fast guys are in this draft class?
I don't know. I haven't looked at all the receivers.
All of them. They're all good. All
right. So we will be back next week for more weird prospect stuff, and we'll see what week 3 of Ryan's team rebuild looks like.
Can we touch on that really quick?
Real quick. Yeah. Ryan, you made a trade. Tell me about it.
Yeah, we did complete the trade. I got... It's funny that we were just talking about Bellinger because I added Bellinger as a part of the trade because that... Now I have like such depth at that.
Hey, you got to get your guy.
Yeah, that's your fucking guy, bro.
That's true. That's so, but he originally came at me, Tony, with like what he wanted. Or no, I told him I wanted his second pick.
Yeah, pick 102, but which you were never going to get for Cup. But you got 107 in Bellinger for Cup, which in a tight end premium, two tight end starting league, I like that a lot.
I think that's as good as you will get, honestly. And I think that's a really good trade for you.
Yeah, I tried. I first offered the second pick, and he's like, no, I can't get rid of that. And then me and Tony were talking. He's like, why don't you ask for the 7th pick and then get one of his players? And I was like, he's got Bellinger. So I took Bellinger.
And I think the way that this draft, I mean, as of right now, we're seeing the drums beat and discourse happen of every quarterback's going top 10. Anthony Richardson's apparently going to be 101 to some people. So that will drive players down, right? We're 107. If 4 quarterbacks rip in the top 5, you're basically going to get RB2 or right wide receiver 1 or 2. So you can get replacement value. And I think that 107 is going to be a really sweet spot to draft from this year.
So that means you have 107 and 109.
Yeah. And then another trade that I still have pending out there is something we talked about last week too, was trading Toucan. You guys said you really liked Elliott, so I offered him Chubb and Elliott, and in return I would get Olave and a 2025 second round.
Yeah, I mean, if he's competing, I think that's pretty good. I mean, that's his for Zeke. It's kind of take what you can get at this point,
right?
Right, but the smart play is shopping Zeke to the guy that you know loves Zeke.
Yeah, know your market and know your league. Those are the two most important things in dynasty trading.
So your rebuild is kicked off in earnest. I think you had a nice move. Yeah.
At this point, that one might sit out there for a while. It doesn't look like he's on too much. But, I mean, I was able to do that cup trade pretty quick the same day.
I wonder when the Armageddon happens. Press, add to trade block next to Tyreek Hill or Josh Allen. That's when the fun starts.
Yeah, well, I think the next player, like I was texting Tony earlier this week, is going to be probably see what I can get for Tyreek.
Two firsts with the value, honestly. I mean, if they're mid to late or a 23 and 24 and you kick back a second, or not a second, but like a third and a player or whatever, like I think that's more than reasonable because as much as we were out on Tyreek last year, as long as Tua has half a brain to lace him up, he's going to repeat.
Right.
Yeah, you should not sell Tyreek for less than
how many first round picks, Tony?
Two. Like Shane said, two, either two this year, even if they're late, or what you say, like a 2023 first and a 2024 first, and you might have to give back like a third.
Yeah. Like if you're getting like 109, a 24 first, and you kick back like 304 or whatever, right? Like,
yeah.
But whatever.
Sure.
So I would hope that you would get two firsts out of the then. Dude, like, depending on how confident you are about your picks, you could always try to run it back with rookies in those spots.
Yeah, true.
So we'll see what happens.
Or if you can't get picks, you can always get value worth of players, right? Instead of that, you get like an Ayuk type.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, so now my depth at tight end is Hunter Henry, Freiermuth, Noah Gray, Tyler Conklin, Jeremy Ruckert, Peyton Hendershot, Jelani Woods, and Bellinger.
You got too many tight ends, dog.
10-man bench.
Right? You got too many dang tight ends.
I know. I got to get some more wide receivers.
You got to get some more everything that's not
tight end. I got everything, yeah.
Rashid Shaheed time, baby.
Yep. All right. On that note, we're going to end 71, and we will be back at you next week for 72. I don't know what we have in store, but we'll figure it out.
Peace.
Good night, everybody. Good night, everyone. Good luck with your February. Yeah.
That's just money laundering.